All right, so September of last year, the Taylor family got a puppy. Lucy, right. If you went on the snow trip, you know Lucy. Here's my question that we're going to start with this evening. As a puppy owner, what are my responsibilities toward this creature?
Feed.
Feed. Okay, I must feed. What else?
Water.
Water. Okay, what was that, Felix?
I'll pick up the trap.
Pick up trap. Yes. And in fact,
play.
What?
Play.
Play, okay?
Shelter.
Shelter.
Toys.
What?
Toys.
Revised toys.
Trains.
Training.
Either spay or neuter or prepare for puppies.
Reproductive decision making. Is that broad enough? Reproduction. I'll put a question mark to indicate we may not be in favor of that. What was awesome? Clean? What was that?
Clean.
What?
Bathe.
Clean, bathe, yes.
Medical.
Yeah, take it to the vet.
Medical.
Puppy proof the house, like from chewing.
Puppy proof the house, yes.
That's
all right, anything else?
Jack
has something to share.
I said the funeral.
Prepare for the funeral?
Wow.
Prepare. Okay.
Arrange
my schedule, yeah. Okay, that's enough. So, here are the things I want to draw out. Here, we're going to make some categories here, because this is going to work with my metaphor, hopefully. So, I'm going to have a category of provision, right? Is that fair? So, provision, right? So, there's kind of like feed, water...
Shelter,
toys, maybe reproduction, I don't know. Provision, right? I provide for my puppy, right? Okay. I'm going to have one of like, let's see, maybe kind of train. I'm going to call it, what should I call it? And I tell my puppy what that puppy can do and can't do, right?
Discipline.
Discipline, yeah. So let's call that discipline. Boundaries, right? I say... Yes, you are allowed to lie in your bed and chew your bone. No, you are not allowed to lie in my bed and chew my shoe, right? So I create options that are good and bad for this puppy, right? I take care. So here's an interesting one. I control the experience of my puppy, right? So maybe puppy proof, toys, play. So if the puppy, if I want to, I let the puppy have fun, right? I give it toys. I walk it. I give it a good experience. If the puppy's bad, there's some like little seventh grade stuff going on over here.
Yeah, it's not reproduction.
Oh, right. I do control that part of the experience as well. Although my puppy is not going to be reproducing, in case you're wondering. So, sorry to disappoint you. So I control... like whether my puppy is experiencing good things or negative things, right? I take things away, I discipline, I punish the puppy, right? So let's call this experience. They're still thinking about the reproductive health of my puppy. And to Jack's point, right? If my puppy proves to be extraordinarily inconvenient to our life. It's true. What will I do?
Give it away.
give it away, or if need be, prepare for a funeral, right? But probably I'll start with giving it away, unless like it's like a demon puppy and it's going to destroy anything and no family is suited. So I will, if need be, I will, we'll just say get rid of. Maybe, dispose of. That's good. I like dispose. That's suitably ambiguous. Okay. Disposal. We'll call that, right? Could be I give it to Ryan. Could be I give it to something else. Okay. So here's my point. What is my relationship to my puppy? Who am I?
Master.
Master. Right. I like that. And I remind my puppy of this. I am the puppy's master. When it growls at me or tries to bite me, we do this thing that Rachel found on, is the dog whisperer, is that his name? Caesar? Something. So like you take the dog and you flip him over on his back, because that's like submissive, and we say, I am your master. You are not my master. You do not get to bite my children. I am in charge of you. Remember that, okay? I am my puppy's master. Got it? All right. Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and
money.
Right. So I am my puppy's master. What we want to talk about tonight is the fact that money is not our master. This is what Jesus is trying to get at through this verse. We have a choice to make money our master, but money is not our master. God is our master, and we can choose that instead. Problem is, it's really complicated to do that, right? And if you think about these things, money does all these things for us, right? Money provides for us. Money gives us what we need or what we think we need. Money tells us what we can do and can't do, right? I can go walk down to the store and buy a sandwich. I can't go buy an island, right? Money creates boundaries in my life. It tells me what I can and can't do because most things require money. Money controls my experience, right? Depending on what money I have and how I choose to use it, I can have a very positive experience or a very negative experience. And amount of money controls the type of life that I live. And money is a cruel master. So if you don't have money, money doesn't care about you, right? Money will get rid of you. Money will cast you aside. Money will find you a new home with Ryan or something worse. So, here's the point of tonight. And here's the phrase that you are going to be sick of by the time I'm done talking to you tonight. You are not money's puppy. You are a disciple of Jesus. This is the idea we want to get into our heads tonight. You are not money's puppy. You are a disciple of Jesus. So Jesus says this thing about two masters, and he says essentially not to make money your master, but he doesn't give a whole lot of education on how to do that, training on how to do that. And what we're noticing, or what we hopefully are noticing as we look through the scriptures, is that Jesus does a bunch of stuff, says a bunch of stuff, changes everything. And then what happens as the course of the Bible unfolds is that the New Testament interprets a lot of that for us. The letters help us to figure out what does it really look like to follow this guy. He says a bunch of cool stuff. He dies for us. He lives for us. He tells us to do this stuff. How do we do it? How do we come together as a community of people centered around him and live lives in discipleship of him? And that's what the letters mostly do. They help us to interpret Jesus. So fortunately for us, there's passages in the letters that help us to figure out what we do with our finances. And we're going to look at a passage in 2 Corinthians 8 tonight.
We're going to look at verses 1 through 15. And this is, I think, one of the best. 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 as well are two of the best chapters in the New Testament letters on real practical issues of how to deal with money, how to handle it, how to work with money, how to be free of money as your master. These are the instructions that help us to do what Jesus wants us to do. A little background for this. Paul is writing this now, the second letter to this community. It's probably perhaps actually the third letter, but we don't have another one, so we call it second. And what he's doing in this section is he's trying to collect a fund from the Corinthians that he can take back to the poor in Jerusalem. And this is called, cleverly enough, the collection. Okay? So he's essentially raising money from them, hoping to support poorer believers in Jerusalem. And this is the section where he's starting to talk about that specifically. So let's start by looking at verses 1 to 5. Will somebody else read that? 2 Corinthians 8, 1 to 5. Does anybody have it open? Drea?
And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. And they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord, and then by the will of God also to us.
Okay, thanks. So I want to make a few observations about what Paul says here and what it means to us. So he's talking to the Corinthians, trying to raise money from them, and he starts off by telling them how generous the Macedonians are. Kind of an interesting method, right? These guys gave a lot of money. Like, the Lord gave them this great generosity. What about you? So he's really drawing a comparison between two people, and he's trying to motivate them toward generosity by holding out an example of another community's lavish generosity. And the way he describes this is really interesting in verse 2. He has a little equation here, okay? And this is a mathematical equation that you don't learn in school. Joy plus poverty equals generosity. Okay? That's what he says in verse 2. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. Joy plus poverty equals generosity. And this is the attitude that Paul wants us to develop. This is what it looks like to not have money be your master. Generosity. That's the term. That's the attitude. That's the lifestyle that someone who isn't money's puppy lives by. Generosity. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. But Paul loves to play on words, and that's what he's doing here. He says their poverty overflowed into generosity. And you think that just doesn't make sense. Poverty can't overflow. There's nothing there. But somehow that's what happened. And he holds them up as this example. Now, the curious thing is sometimes actually having more money makes it harder to be generous. You'd think that, well, if you have more, then it's easier to give it away, right? But that's often not the case. Often when you don't have a lot of money, you find it easier to be generous because you're used to not relying on money. And then when you start making money and saving money and building up accounts, then you realize, hey, I need this. I want this. You start using it. You start doing cool things with it. And then you start to hold on to it tighter and tighter. So it's not that rare that their lower means enables them to be generous. Verse 3, he says that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. So this is the remarkable thing that they did. They gave beyond their means. And if we're going to think about what enables us to be generous, the key decision to make is to live below our means. To live on less than we have. Because if we're going to be free to give some away, we have to learn to live on less than we make. And that's tricky, right? Because you work hard for your money. And if you earn it, you want to spend it. You want to use it. You have it. But the discipline here, and the reason he's holding up these Macedonians as an example, is that they gave more than they were able. They lived below the level that they could. Now, here's one of the things that makes this hard. We are a consumer culture. We're described as capitalist. What worth are you in our culture? If we are a consumer culture, what do you contribute to our culture? This is where you talk.
You help the economy by buying lots of stuff.
Yes. So, your value as a person in our culture is basically you can buy things, right? That's what makes you valuable. What was the most important issue for the last presidential election? The economy, right? Jobs, money, the economy. What builds the economy? When you buy things, when you spend, when you consume products. So we live in a culture, we live in a society that tells us you're valuable because you can buy things. And if you stop buying things, the culture, the society, you don't matter. You don't help. You don't contribute at all if you stop buying things. Now, that's the culture we live in. That's the world we live in. But that's not reality. That's not what we're actually valued for. But we hear that message over and over again. And even the words we use, the fact that you are at your core, your value is based on the fact that you are a consumer. You can buy things, and what do you do when you buy something? You consume it. You devour it. And then it's gone. Right? There's no, like, process. There's no, like, purpose. You buy things and you consume them. And that's it. End of line. Right? The next phone comes out and you buy the next phone. The next car, buy the next car. The next house, whatever. We are consumers. I think that's the mindset that we need to somehow help each other get out of if we're going to live below our means, if we're going to foster generosity. Doesn't mean you don't buy things, because you have to buy things. You have to buy food. You have to find shelter. The way our culture works is financially. That's how you get stuff. So it's not that you have to stop buying things, but we have to start thinking differently about what it means to buy something, about what that looks like. One of the problems is that I like to buy things. Spending money's fun, right? I mean, I've been thinking about this because thinking about this talk, and I think part of it is money is a form of power, right? So if I have some money, I can go up to somebody and say, give me that. And I'll give you this, and they give it to me, right? And I like that. It's a good feeling, right? Sometimes, like, I'll go to the grocery store. Usually Rachel does the grocery shopping, but I love going to the grocery store because it's like permitted buying, you know? And I can, like, I buy this. And it's just like buying. It's this great experience of exerting power over your world, right? I am transferring ownership of this box of Cheerios into my possession. And I am more powerful for doing so, right? So we like buying. We like being consumers. It builds us up. It makes us feel good. So I want to suggest a different way of thinking about ourselves. Rather than consumers, I want to suggest that we think of ourselves as trees. Okay? Enough said. So Here's the point. So a tree doesn't consume, right? What does a tree do? What does a tree take in? Air, water, sun. Anything else?
Nutrients.
If it's one of those like I guess trees don't eat bugs, but like those fly traps. Yeah, they like eat creatures. Those are cool. So trees ingest things, right? And then what do they produce?
Firewood.
Firewood, exactly. Oxygen, firewood. What?
Fruit.
Fruit, yeah. Good stuff, right? Pollen, bad stuff too. Let's not think about pollen. But so, if you think about trees, there's an organic, there's a process, right? There's an ingestion and there's an output. And if you think about, basically, they take in nutrients and they produce fruit. I think that's how we want to think about ourselves. You have to spend money. You have to ingest. You have to take stuff in. But you don't have to consume. What makes us fruitful? I think that's the heart of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, to be fruitful. And so as we spend money, as we buy things, what? Maybe that's a way of thinking about making decisions about spending money. What is a fruitful purchase? What is a fruitful way to spend money? What is something that we don't just consume, but that ends up living out beyond us, providing fruit? Maybe fruit in ministry, fruit in relationships, fruit in helping the world somehow. How can we be more like trees and not consumers? So the first idea is that you are not a consumer. You don't have to think that way. And to go back to our main idea, you are not money's puppy. You are a disciple of Jesus. Money does not have to be your master. Our economy does not have to tell us who we are at heart. We have a different master that tells us who we are. And that master values fruitfulness, not consumption. Moving on, verses 6 to 9. Will somebody read verses 6 to 9 in chapter 8?
So we urged Titus. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Since he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion this act of grace on your part. But just as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in your love for us, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. I am not commanding you, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich.
Thanks, David. So, what Paul says here, one of the points he makes is that how we handle our money, how we handle finances, is an integral part of what it means to follow Jesus. He says, just as you excel in everything, see also that you excel in this grace of giving. And what a lot of people have observed is that money and the way people handle money is often the last step in Christian discipleship, because it's often the hardest. Martin Luther was fond of saying there are three levels of conversion: of the mind, of the heart, and then of the purse. That's often the last thing. And what Paul's saying here is, you guys are mature. You guys, you've got it going well. Just as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in earnestness, in your love for us. These are not like remedial Christians here. They're mature. They're excelling in all these things. Add this to it. Do this too. Excel in this grace of giving. And I think this is helpful for us, and I think it's helpful for Yaf, because this is you guys are a good community. I mean, you take God seriously. You ask God what he wants from you. This is not kind of a beginner's group. Like, there's some mature faith in this room. One of the things Todd and Carla said after they spent some time with you guys last week is they said, yeah, you just have a really strong group of believers there. And I said, oh, they fooled you that well? So, he said, yeah. But that's true. I mean, there's a lot of maturity here. And I don't know what types of decisions you're making. I don't know this about you. But I know for a lot of people, this is often the last thing. It's often one of the hardest things to do, to excel also in this grace of giving, of being generous. And money is funny because money is an incredible statement of what really matters to us. And money is also, I think, one of the hardest things to talk about honestly and openly with each other, because there's so many complicated issues about backgrounds, where you come from, how much money you make, what that says about what you're worth in our world. And I won't ask for you to raise hands, but I want you to think about how often you've had a real honest discussion with somebody about some issue of sexuality, some struggle that you've had, or some sin in your past. And that's hard to talk about, right? I mean, our sex lives are very personal. They're very private. And so we don't talk about those a lot. But we get in small groups and we pray and we get in same gender groups. And sometimes we talk about that because we can be vulnerable there. So now think about how often you've talked about financial decisions with somebody else. And I'm willing to bet for most of you it's a lot less. That you'll easily, more easily talk about sex than you'll talk about money. Honestly, vulnerably. Not just money as a concept, but like your money and how you spend your money or save your money or give your money. This is hard stuff to talk about. It's, I think, the hardest to really be honest about. So what Paul's trying to point out here, what I want us to notice, is that money is a big part of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. Not because, and we'll come to this point again later, not because God needs our money. It's not about the money. It's not about the needs. It's not about what you're doing with your money. It's about you. It's about your heart. Jesus says in Luke 12, 34 this. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So this isn't about, you know, I'm not going to get to the end of this and say, and PBC wants to do this cool thing and we need more money from you. It's not about that. It's not about what your money does. It's about you. And living as a slave to money is not a good thing, because it's not a good experience, because money is a bad master. And you are not, what? Money's puppies. You are disciples of Jesus. All right, well, someone read verses 10 through 12.
And here is my advice about what is best for you in this matter. Last year, you were the first not only to give, but also to have the desire to do so. Now finish the work so that your eager willingness to do it may be matched by your completion of it, according to your means. For if the willingness is there, the gift is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what he does not have.
Okay, thanks, Alyssa. So the first part of the passage, we looked at this issue of how we can live below our means, how we can not spend all that we have, how we can reject this idea that we are essentially consumers, how we can rethink ourselves. And then we looked at this issue that doing that is actually probably one of the hardest parts, but an integral part of what it means to follow Jesus, of our discipleship, of following in his footsteps. As Paul said, Jesus emptied himself to minister to us. We get to this part, and if, you know, these words have been doing some of their work, you guys are all thinking, yeah, this is good. Like, I want to be more generous. I really do want to be more generous. And there's a lot of good intentions in the room right now, right? If the Bible's words are having their effect. But what Paul says here in verse 10 is, now finish the work so that your eager willingness to do it may be matched by your completion of it. So what he's saying is, that's great that you really want to. He's praising the Corinthians. He's saying, you guys were the first ones to want to give. Now you have to actually give. Now you have to follow through with it. Now you have to not just want it, but do it. And that's another step. I mean, Building the desire is one thing. It's hard enough to want to be generous. But then it's another thing to actually put that into practice. And he's saying, he's giving them some specific things, some kind of concrete things. And I want to give some suggestions, because there are some practical ways that I've found make giving easier. One of those is having a budget. Knowing what you make, how you spend, how you save, how you give. Being able to keep track of that on some level helps you to figure out how you can give. Because if you don't, if you just kind of let your money come in and you spend it and you're kind of vaguely aware that you have enough to cover this month's rent or mortgage or whatever, then it's hard to give intentionally. So some level of budgeting is a practical way to do this. One of the things we've done as a family, and actually came after studying these couple chapters together in seminary, is that we've set up a separate bank account that we keep, that because we don't always know what we want to give to, but we want to give a certain amount of our income every month. So we have a separate bank account that we just put money in, and we think of that as God's bank account. And whenever we give money, we give from there, but every month we just put money in there. And once we put it in there, it's like a, you know, one-way door type thing, right? So once it's in there, it's in there. It's done. And the cool thing is then we don't give every month from there as much as we put in there. And so then when somebody comes and says, hey, I got this really cool thing, can you support me? We're like, oh yeah, sure, just write a check. It's easy because it's not my money anyway. I've already given it away. It's already God's money. And now I just get to assign it to some cool thing. And that's that makes giving really fun. Because I'm not like, oh man, do I have enough? I guess I cannot eat tomorrow. You know, it's like, I've already given the money away. Now I just get to share it. So that's a practical way that we found to be helpful. Another thing is just giving first of the month, paycheck, whatever, kind of have that be the first cut and just get it out of your sight. Like, we are weak, or I'm weak anyway, and if it's there, we'll want to use it. So one helpful thing is just as soon as it comes in, just get it away. Like, put it in another bank account, whatever you want to do with it, get it away, give it, write your checks to whoever you support, and just kind of forget that it was ever there, right? Kind of convince yourself that you never had it in the first place. That makes it easier. And then sometimes, you know, what I do is just kind of, sometimes we think about it and we budget it and we're like, how do we want to increase our giving, but how do we do it? And we're just like, I don't know, let's just do it. You know, let's stop thinking about it, let's just do it. And so, you know, my bank, you have a kind of a monthly transfer from one account to another, so let's just increase it, and we'll figure it out how we survive later. You just kind of got to do it sometimes and see what happens. So I think these things are helpful, and I'm sure there's others, and if there's others, you can share them with each other. This is just some things that I've found helpful, but this is a practical thing, right? This is sitting down, if you're married, with your spouse, if you're single, with your checkbook and like your bank accounts or mint.com or whatever. And like, it's not just like you walk out of here and you're like, God, you're holy, I'm so glad, Yaf was awesome. This is like, you got to do something. It's like practical, and there are steps to take, and there's thought to be had. And again, it's not about the money. It's about your heart, and it's about freeing yourself from mastery to money. So good intentions aren't enough. Paul says, that's great that you have this desire. Now follow through with it. Do the hard work. Take a night and don't watch TV. Look at your budget. Whatever it is. Take some steps. Actually do the practical things that enable you to be generous. Last part, verses 13 to 15. Will someone read that?
For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that it, as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, and that there may be fairness. As it is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack.
Thanks, David. So what Paul wants to say here is, again, it's not the point that you're not supposed to sacrifice everything you have, give of yourself, and decrease your life so that another person can get rich off of your money. It's not about the money. But what he is saying is that there's this community aspect involved. When you have abundance, you share of it. And when you have lack, you will be shared with. It's kind of, it all goes around. And we want to live in a generous community, right? But if we're going to live in a generous community, we have to be generous. I was joking with Juan earlier tonight because Rachel's having surgery. And some of you, I noticed, have signed up to bring us meals. And we have all the people bringing us meals. And I often say, I have the spiritual gift of being served, which is a great gift to have. And I'm really good at it. So if you want to serve me, feel free. But the thing is, I have to be in a community that has the other side of that spiritual gift. And I occasionally have to exert that. I actually have to serve so that I can exercise my real gift of being served, right? This is how it works, right? In a community, you have to share. You have to be generous. And at times, then you'll find yourself the recipient of generosity. So in a community, and particularly in the community of faith, we take care of each other. That's one of the mechanisms God has built to give us the freedom to be generous with our money, because we know we're part of a community that's going to take care of us if we fall on hard times, if something happens. We're not going to go hungry. We're not going to live on the streets. We will take care of each other. And the other aspect that I think is interesting to think about is that this is not just an individual personal thing. There are some real personal practical steps to go home and take, to think about. Think about how you spend. Think about how you save. Think about how you give. There's some very kind of one-on-one with God, with your finances, thinking about this. But the truth is that we live in a community, and communities create norms, and communities influence the way each other behaves. And so it's not just about how I spend my money and how I think about my money, but we actually affect each other in this, in good ways and in negative ways. And so we go out and we do things together and we spend money, or we don't go out and don't spend money, or we spend money on certain things and not other things. And when we make decisions with our money, that affects somebody next to us. And they think, oh, well, that if that's okay, then that makes me think differently, or maybe that's not okay. And so it's helpful to be aware that we live in a community, and the decisions we make with our money are not simply about me and my money or my vacation or my car or my checkbook or whatever. Like, they have implications, and they set standards or they change standards. And so we can help each other in this. We can help foster a community of generosity, foster a community of being willing to live below your means so that you can be free to give. So we have a role with each other, community. So it's not just that you are not money's puppy, but we are not money's puppy. We are disciples of Jesus. This is why we come together to do this, to talk about it, to encourage each other. We're on this journey of discipleship together, and we can help each other in it. So just want to close by thinking about the fact that the hard thing is that I know if you're like me, a lot of times it feels like money is our master. Because money does do all of these things. Money does provide for us. Money controls our experience. Money is so powerful in our world. It controls so much of the way we live and how we live. The goal here, again, is not to meet the needs of the world. The goal is not PBC needs more money. The goal is not I need more money or some missionaries need more money. The goal is that we need to be free from the mastery of money. Our hearts need to be free. Another term for generosity is liberality. And I like that word because liberality is being liberated. And that's what we're after. We're after this state of being free. As God does work, often I received an email from one of these Christian magazines I read, and there's a big article about money in it. And this quote, "Biblical contentment means taking appropriate risk and trusting God for the outcome." Trusting God for the outcome. Taking appropriate risk and trusting God for the outcome. That's the type of freedom that we want for ourselves. The freedom to follow God. The freedom not to worry. And worry whether money's going to provide, because we know that God's going to provide. Worry whether we have enough money to do the things we want to do, because we know that God's going to give us the life that he wants for us. worry that money controls our experience because God does, and worry that, well, what if we stop having money? What if we lose our jobs? What if we waste it all? Then what? Money is a heartless master, but God is not. And the people of God are not. We take care of each other. You are not money's puppy. You are a disciple of Christ. And that's what we can encourage each other with, and that's what we can help each other to live like. Let me pray for us. God, I want to thank you that you free us from the power of money, the power of living enslaved to our finances. We live in a world where probably that is one of the most dominant forces in our culture, the power of money, the power of making money and spending money. And God, it's hard to view ourselves in a countercultural way, to see ourselves differently than how we're being told to see ourselves. But we're grateful that you do see us differently and that we are more than consumers to you. We are worth more than what we can contribute to the economy. We are precious, and we are loved, and we are cared for. God, help us in these practical areas to foster a spirit of generosity, of a liberality. Help us to be free and to live free and to live as your disciples. We need help with this. We need to help each other, but mostly we need the help of your Spirit. We pray you'd send it. In Jesus' name, amen.